Hello, and thank you for joining us for this podcast. Over the last year, charities have made unprecedented shifts to digital, whether it's fundraising, service delivery, or internal operations, and all of these come with new digital challenges. We talk about this almost every day at Charity Digital. Many charities have learned a lot in the last year by switching to digital resources for all facets of charity operations. But it's been a year now. Many of us have worked out what works and what doesn't. So now is the time to optimize. And the only way to do this effectively is to start with the needs of your service users. In this podcast, we want to discuss the importance of developing user-centered solutions rather than splurging on exciting new tech that may not be useful to your audience, and essentially why digital first means people first. As we are all operating from home still, we apologize for any audio issues that may occur. So I wanted to quick kick things off by introducing everyone here. So I'll start. I'm Nick Wyatt, and I basically do the growth marketing here at Charity Digital, which means I take care of all the social and paid advertisement channels. I'll pass on to Shaf.
Hi, I'm Shaf Mansour. Got over 10 years experience in the charity sector, 6 years on the charity side and almost 5 years on the software developer side. Background at places like Barnardo's and Action for Blind People and UNICEF. And currently working as a product manager at the Access Group, specializing in our not-for-profit software and digital tools.
Great, thanks. Jill?
I'm Jill Haynes, and I'm the Marketing and Communications Manager for the Fashion and Textile Children's Trust. I've been with the charity for 10 years now, and before that I worked for a community charity in East London. And then prior to that I came from the fashion retail sector, which is what led me to FTCT.
Okay, thank you so much. Anna?
Hi, my name is Anna Pangborn and I'm the Chief Exec of the Fashion and Textile Children's Trust. I've been in role for just over 10 years. Prior to this, I set up and ran a live newsroom charity for children in Tower Hamlets, having originally come from a teaching background.
So could you quickly just give me an introduction into your charities?
Yes. So in brief, we give financial support to families where the parent works in the UK fashion and textile industry. And the focus of our grants are the children being up to 18 years of age in the family. So we can help to pay for essential items, things like clothing, bedding and white goods. If a child has additional needs, we can help to pay for things like sensory items, therapies, mobility equipment and so on. To apply to the charity, the parent must have worked in the UK fashion and textile industry for at least a year, and that covers a whole range of things. So it could be somebody who works in a supermarket that sells clothing, a high street fashion retailer, a weaver, a dyer, a foot store, bridal wear, etc., etc. But in the last 12 months we've really seen absolutely unparalleled demand for our grants, with the collapse of retail giants such as Debenhams and Arcadia, and the retail sector in general being so badly affected. We anticipate that demand is likely to remain really high.
Perfect. Great, thanks. So they've given us a little icebreaker here, and I don't know if you've all seen it, but I was going to ask it, but I feel like surely everyone here puts a tea bag first when they're making a cup of tea, not milk first, surely.
Possibly the most controversial thing to talk about.
I can't, everyone says it's controversial, but I feel like everyone I meet says, no, I put the tea bag in first. Is anyone going to...
Well, I don't know. I grew up in a household where it was milk first, actually.
Oh,
but
now
I live with a tea drinker that, honestly, I'd be asked to leave the house if I did that. So it is tea bag first, 100%.
I'm going to say it's coffee every time for me, so I can avoid the controversy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm a bit of a bad person to ask because I never have milk in my tea. But still, if I were to...
I think it depends how... Some people like really milky, weaker tea, which I think is fine. But if you want to really extract any strength from your tea bag, it's got to be in first with the hot water, otherwise it's just not going to work.
That's true. I'll look at it that way. So if you like it milky, it's fine to put the milk in first. Okay, so let's dive in with the sort of the big general question, but how important do you guys feel it is to put people at the heart of your digital projects? Shaf, do you want to start us off?
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think absolutely it's important. I think generally any kind of change can be a bit overwhelming, or people don't like change generally, especially when outcomes aren't entirely understood or known. And digital is one of those things that has always been kind of there, and it involves people, and people need to be there to drive that change. So, and the word digital transformation comes up a lot around it. So I think it's important that you need those people to understand it, to be at the centre of it and to drive the change. I think, again, depending on the context for each charity, it can vary hugely. So from my experience working at charities, it meant different things. Depending on the size of the change and what was going to be involved, depended on who needed to, you know, how to get the buy-in, and then all the way down to the people that actually needed to use the tools that were going to be kind of any new tools that can be implemented or new ways of working. I think when it comes to creating the actual products and services, absolutely 100%, it needs to be done with the people at the centre of it. And working at Action for Blind People was probably a time where we built the website there, where it was probably the time where I don't think I've worked as close as we had then. It was creating even the facilitation for the workshops to scope out the requirements were run with people from the community. People with sight loss were involved in those, just to make sure that anyone in those workshops and everyone in those workshops was included and could get their points of view across. Similarly at Bernardo's, working with young people and children in the services to help develop the right digital tools and services for them as well.
Does anyone jump in for that?
I can go next. Just to sort of set the scene for our charity, we are a grant giving charity. So within the last 12 months, and particularly poignant today because it's been 1 year since we've been in lockdown, we have been giving out grants to those who have been affected within the fashion and textiles sector, which has been significant in the last 12 months. I think for the putting people at the heart of everything we do is absolutely critical. So for the families that we support, these are families who have been made redundant, have been furloughed and so on. So what we're asking them to do is to complete an application form at a time of particular kind of stress and anxiety and financial sort of need, if you like. So I think making sure that everything that we do is focused around those families is absolutely critical.
I think it's also important to include our staff and team members, obviously, as important in any digital projects or decisions that we make, because particularly as we continue to work remotely, communication around issues which are affecting our productivity is key, and also for how we can keep pushing things forward to help our staff do their work more effectively. We found that during lockdown, simply trying to switch our offline processes to online, it's not always been easy. So, you know, regular communications and brainstorming, having to rethink how our processes can be digital first in making them fit around the service users' needs has been kind of key. And also making sure that the team has everything they need to be able to kind of deliver those services as effectively as possible.
Yeah, I always find that when everyone starts talking about digital, they always forget about the user. It's just one of those things. Mm. You start talking about tech, you get so excited about software and hardware that you forget that somebody has to man it. But I guess with all these examples you've given, I mean, for your goals and objectives, why was it so important making this decision to put people first?
I mean, certainly, you know, going back to our charity, you know, that this is our sole purpose of the charity, is enabling families to receive grants. So we have to make everything that we do as technically straightforward as we can for those families. And just remembering, walking in their shoes, really, I think, you know, and for some families, you know, they may not have a computer at home. They may not be, you know, technically literate and struggle with things like attachments or PDFs. All of these acronyms that we have and we're familiar with may not be, you know, familiar for a parent who's trying to access our grants, and also, you know, complete an application form whilst continuing with, you know, homeschooling the kids, cooking dinner, shopping, all the rest of the kind of parental duties as well.
Yeah, I remember when we first worked with Fashion and Textile Children's Trust to help kind of figure out how the website needs to be structured. I remember talking to Jill about this, and there were kind of two areas that we're looking at in terms of users. One was figuring out what do the people need that are applying for grants, and trying to figure out how do we structure their user journey and make sure that that's as simple and straightforward as possible. But also thinking about Jill and the team, and thinking, you know, there are things that you need from this as well to make your life easier, to remove steps in your work, and make sure you're not overwhelming the team with unnecessary applications, for example, and seeing what we can do there. So there were two kind of angles to look at it, and trying to find that sweet spot that worked for both was quite, yeah, quite a bit of work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely glad that going into, you know, looking back a year, and I'm really glad that we had the website, because it was everything we needed it to be, you know, mobile optimized. We had donation tools already set up. Our online inquiry form was just working really well. So to be going into lockdown, to be receiving such high levels of grant requests, if we had not had our website working as kind of seamlessly and as effectively as it has been, then yeah, it would have been a lot more of a difficult process. So the website has been absolutely kind of key in our support system, particularly within this last year.
Yeah, I imagine it would be so. It's been a very difficult year for many, many charities. So having those things in place has been night and day difference for so many charities. I guess the next question would then be, for other charities going about their digital projects, how would they choose those projects, and what platforms do you think they should use?
It's a definite mix between leading with the needs of service users and also the needs of the organisation. So kind of, you know, any decisions that are to do with platforms to use, they're kind of which platforms to choose are the end point. You have to start with, what do you need first? Why? Because actually also it might be the platform you're using is absolutely fine. You just need to use it in a more optimized way. Perhaps you already have the tools that you need. So starting with why is a really important question. Why are you changing it? What do you need to get out of this platform? And considering the needs of everyone who accesses those, your organization, from your service users to your supporters to your staff, is just the fundamental point you have to start with to make any decisions about choosing digital projects or platforms to pursue. And I think particularly for smaller charities, you know, there's an advantage with our charity in the fact that we can make changes really quickly, but also we're trying to deal with our day-to-day as a priority. So within the decision-making process is that we choose, we have to consider the balance of what's best for the future and pushing our kind of services forward, but also managing that in a mindful way so that we don't impact on the core function, which is grant processing.
Mm. And just to build on what Jill was saying there as well, like, from once you've, you know, the why is a really good question to start with, we always recommend that as well. And then like figuring out goals from that, what you're trying to achieve as well. I think something around the, you know, if we're talking about the pandemic as well, just sort of mentioned, so you know, a lot of things in digital, I think, were used as a immediate, it didn't allow for gradual stuff, right? It was a bit of urgency. We need to do this now. This needs to be a fix now. I think now coming out of it, it needs to be thinking about what's more longer term thinking around that, a bit more strategic and sustainable. I think when picking products, think of, you know, look for products that can grow as well. So it might have particular functionality at the moment, but something that, think about where you see yourselves in 3 years time or so, and can this product grow with the organization as well to add extra layers of functionality, extra capabilities as the needs become greater. And then something actually I've learned since working on the software side myself is I now know that to ask questions around who can I talk to in the product team? This is going to be something that I'm, you know, it's close to my heart, because we spend a lot of time talking to the charities ourselves. I mean, we can't always get close to the service users ourselves or the supporters, so we can get close to the people that know them best, which are the people working at the charities. And I'd ask questions around, you know, are there beta programs? How can I influence that roadmap? What can I do to do that? If I'm going to invest in this product, it's an investment after all, and you want to see a return on that investment. So thinking about, you know, what are the possibilities to steer, to get involved, to be close to the product and the product team? I think those are really important questions as well. And I'm actually surprised at how close you can get. Don't think most people know that you can, you know, you can just open those lines of communication and talk about it and feedback.
I think it's really important also to plan in time, you know, when you're bringing new digital projects on board, just to make sure that there's time within the kind of team management and so on of learning and upskilling everybody as well in that process, because it could be very easy and very tempting, particularly as we're kind of very being sort of pushed towards, quite rightly, sort of the more digital aspect, but just making sure that bringing the team along that journey is really important as well, just making sure that everybody's confident in what they're using, why they're using it, to make sure that it has real integrity and depth to what you're doing as well, and making sure that it's sustainable, so we're not sort of jumping straight into it and then thinking, oh, why did we do that? So it's making sure that we're really kind of doing the research. We're actually we're just researching at the moment a new CRM for the charity and going through all of those kind of questions and processes in terms of, okay, why do we need a CRM, what's this for, what do we want to get out of it, you know. So it's a good process to be doing, but it has to be done at the pace of the charity. And I think as a small charity, it can be very easy to feel overwhelmed by the larger charities saying, wow, gosh, look what they're doing, look how many grants they're giving out every year. And you have to just put that to one side and just go at your own pace of the charity, what's right for you.
Yeah, definitely. I think a few of you touched on it, but also how in these processes, how do you take into consideration the service user? I know you guys have discussed some of the things that you've done, but were there any sort of surveys or interviews done with your service users to get an understanding?
I mean, our service users are great. They're just so open to giving feedback. And whenever we have approached them and asked, they've just been absolutely brilliant. They, as a standard, every grant recipient gets what is currently a paper feedback form. Someday it will be digital, where they're asked to rate our service and also tell us how the grant is helping our family. And that in itself, those quotes are hugely informative to kind of form what the grants are doing, the impact that they're having for families. But more specific projects that we've worked with service users on are, for example, during the website build, we made sure that we had a working group. They tested the beta website. We ironed out any usability issues or kind of architecture where it wasn't just the flow wasn't making sense. And made those changes so that we knew it best suited their needs. Then to more recently, we tested the newest version of our application form with another group, and we actually used an external facilitator for that. It was a proper insight project, but it was great. They could inform us about the wording, the layout, really making sure it hit the right tone. Because when people are applying to us, there's a lot of emotional barriers going on. Mm. It's very difficult to ask for help from anyone, let alone a charity. So they getting that right tone and getting the language right and the wording right was really important. So service users were absolutely critical for that process, and it was a great project. It was really successful.
That's great.
We've had There have been many times in my experience where if we hadn't talked about to the service users, I dread to think what could have happened. But one time that really stands out was whilst at Barnardo's, we had some budget to build an app, and it was defined as an app before we'd even looked at any needs or what was there. And it was a time when everyone wanted an app because that was the thing that everyone wanted. And it was the first question we asked is why an app? Like, just to ask, how was this decided? And we couldn't really get any clarity on that. So the first thing we did is talk to the service users, and very quickly it was identified that most of them didn't have smartphones. So they wouldn't have been able to get the app if it was ever created. So that averted a lot of wastage there in terms of time and money and effort to create something that also wouldn't have helped in the way it was intended to. So potentially, like, there have been people that have been left without the help that they would have got. So that just meant from that learning, you know, the ground up there, was the whole thing was done with including those service users to help us develop the whole thing. In the end, it was a responsive website was enough to suffice what we needed. And the whole journey through we included them as well. As Jill mentioned, it was helpful to get from them kind of even the language, the tone that was used, the wording that was used for their, you know, it was age appropriate and relevant to how they talk about the things that we needed to talk about. But yeah, the potential to also avert a lot of wasted effort is really important to early on get that feedback.
Yeah, that's such a great, with the app, that's such a great example of people being a little overexcited about some tech when sometimes we don't really need to use it. I see it all the time, but sometimes you just can't help yourself. Next question, I guess, and this is something that's affecting everyone at the moment, is how do you find lockdown has changed people's digital expectations?
I mean, I think certainly from our experience as a charity, I think there was an expectation from our corporate partners, so kind of fashion retailers, that you know, charities and ours included would automatically be able to divert from kind of face-to-face meetings, Zoom, Teams, WebEx, words we didn't even know a year ago, let's face it, you know, and we have been able to achieve this, but we've had to find workarounds, you know, due to limitations of remote working as well. So I think, you know, we're there now and it's been good because it's given us the kind of push we needed, absolutely. I think in respect of fundraising, as with many charities, all of our usual events have just gone, dried up, cancelled, etc. So, you know, where we would have been invited to be the chosen charity at a dinner event or whatever it is, those are gone. So I think, again, it's really good because we need to, and we expect to be exploring, you know, many more kind of increased digital opportunities. So I think it's going to be a really exciting time for us.
I
think from speaking to lots of charities myself, it's really interesting. There's something that came to mind recently, and it was slightly concerning. So I think it depends who you speak to and what the expectations will be. And some of them will be more realistic and managed, and some of them will be a little bit out there. It reminded me of after something like No Makeup Selfie. Everybody expected that they were going to put out that social media post and it was going to go viral and it was going to get all the income they needed for the year. And I think there's a slight danger that with digital people will think it's the same after just put it online and we'll make a virtual event and it'll do everything we need it to do and more. So I think there has to be a reality check to it in terms of those expectations need to be managed. And those things still take a lot of effort to do. It's not just putting up an event and expecting everyone to sign up for it. Teams work a lot. They do a lot of hard work behind the scenes to make these things come together, to connect, to make sure the communications goes out on the right channels, to make sure they've, you know, segmented their data in the right way and they're targeting the right people and doing all those things that you need to do to make these things work. It's not just put it out there, put an event up and hope that everyone is going to sign up to it and it's going to be the answer to all of our problems. And it really did remind me of the times like everyone wanted everything to go viral after those few big successful campaigns. I think we talk a little bit about this last year of being some sort of forced digital maturity. So where people may have intentionally or unintentionally dodged some of the tech before, they've come to rely on it during lockdown. And I think it offers an opportunity for charities to rethink their audiences, at least have a look back and think, have we consciously or unconsciously excluded anyone because we've assumed that they don't use this tech or they're not ready for this tech or we won't be able to reach them on this via these channels rather than just the tech. And I think it's definitely worth the reviewing of that and seeing whether we can reach newer audiences or different audiences that perhaps before we've not included in our thinking and planning.
I think in terms of our charity, I think our approach to date has been to approach what we would call bricks and mortar retailers. So all of your kind of high street retailers. And I think the retailers that have done well during lockdown have been the online retailers. And we did a campaign as part of a trade magazine for Christmas. And that drew kind of more online retailers. And we've got a couple of sort of exciting partnerships with online retailers coming up. And I think that for us is going to be a really exciting area to explore because they have the kind of technology and expertise that we can really kind of plug into as well. So I think it's going to be, you know, really exciting. And those brands, you know, for us are kind of smaller brands where we can get potentially greater traction and really nice kind of projects and fundraising partnerships going. So I think it's going to be a blend of both continuing with, you know, the kind of bricks and mortar retailers and our kind of what we would call traditional fundraising, but blending that with digital fundraising as well, but slowly. I mean, we're at the very kind of start of the journey of that.
Are there any digital platforms that have helped with these changes in expectations?
I'm going to go back to our website because so at the beginning of April, we were approached by, as Anna mentioned, the Trade magazine, who we have always been their chosen charity at their physical events. So suddenly, obviously, those events aren't happening. We need to move this online. our website allowed us to absolutely do that. So we could set up the appeal, we could set up the donation pages, and we had a hub on our website that was going to do everything we needed it to do and replace the functionality that otherwise we would have been using at events. So that has been key for us in terms of a platform to really help us make that happen. And then it's just been the obvious other ones, like Instagram's a really big growing channel for us. We use it a lot. A lot of our supporters are there. But Facebook is really important for us as well. A lot of the families that we have supported previously follow us on Facebook. But there's also a lot of potential for us in LinkedIn as a way of reaching out to new corporate partners, but also people that may need our support.
I think that was particularly actually recently with Arcadia. You know, that was the first time we really kind of pushed out to anybody who had kind of manager or area manager in their job title, you know, was hearing from us. And that's the first time we've done it. And we saw a really good kind of uptake on that, which is really good to see, and will definitely be kind of a template for how we move forward in terms of reaching out to employees.
I think it's just what LinkedIn showed us was we were meeting people where they were at, instead of using other channels where if everyone had not been at home, if everyone had been, you know, everything had continued as normal, it would have been email. But suddenly people weren't on email, people were using that, or, you know, people had lost their jobs. And so LinkedIn suddenly became this new channel that we could use to get to people, to get messages to people when they needed it most, through a professional network. So not Facebook, you're not kind of going in when they're looking for updates on their friends and families, you're going to LinkedIn where they're already in work mode to some extent, but you can approach them in a way that is kind of more personal than email. So it has been great for us. But I also want to mention another channel with our Google Ads, which we also work with Access on, and they have been amazing over this last year. So many people have found us through our Google Grants funded adverts, and also just kind of some of our pages have been doing particularly well through organic search as well. But search engine traffic has been a big way for people to find out about the charity this year, which has been brilliant.
Yeah, it's great to hear that from our side as well. And I think to give the technology perspective on this, we've got four kind of key pillars that make up our strategy in terms of how where we're trying to add value as much as possible. And that's around either understanding supporters and beneficiaries better and around their experience is one pillar. Another bit is around kind of providing powerful data to help charities understand them, and income generation, and making sure that there are easy ways that people can give where they want to. Security and compliance, obviously, we haven't talked about that a lot, but it's really important, particularly now that more people are online. The pandemic's forced everyone online. I talk about it fairly often in terms of, like, even the baddies have got online and have been forced to innovate in their ways as well of doing things. So it's important to make sure that security is all taken care of as well. And then operational efficiency. So, you know, kind of, again, thinking about the staff and the team that work at the charity as well. It's not just always all about the end user, and although they're very important, but thinking about, you know, how you can efficiently manage teams and volunteers and anything else the charity needs to do as well. And then Jill mentioned there the ad grants product. So again, we're looking at it from the perspective of what are all the different stages of a funnel, and the full journey, the full supporter journey or beneficiary journey. And we're thinking about, you know, ad grants might be the first touch point, the website might be the second touch point, and then kind of how that continues. So once you've got the data into the CRM, what you can do with that data, and then around areas of automation, we've got like a MailChimp integration to make sure that you can segment and get the right information to the right people to keep that journey flowing and build and deepen those levels of engagement as well.
Okay, great. So I guess taking everything that was just said there about the platforms and the changing expectations, how do you feel these sort of things are going to affect other charities?
Sorry, could you repeat that question again?
Sorry, I probably should explain it a little better. Just taking everything we just discussed about the different platforms that have been used for digital expectations that have changed over the last year, how do you feel that some of these will affect other charities in the sector?
I think probably it's going to be about expectation, as Chef was saying earlier, about if people are spending more time online and if people are getting more of their services online, there is going to be that expectation around digital experience. And unfortunately, perhaps, but also it's an opportunity that there's days of kind of concession for a lesser digital experience just because you're a charity or a small charity in particular are gone. So the website has to be usable. It has to be easy to navigate. You have to be on the platforms that your service users are on. And obviously for charities, if they have limited time, limited budgets, that can of course be very tough. But ultimately, if we can deliver to the level that people expect, then we can achieve our goals and purposes as an organisation. So even as Anna said, setting aside some time to just consider that and making time to kind of put this at the front of your priority list is going to be really helpful for organisations to meet those expectations that people now have.
I think just add to that the effect of the pandemic. We don't know how long it's all going to go on for, you know, kind of on the roadmap out, but you never know. I think the opportunities, it's at least proven that, you know, you can break down some of those barriers. So where physical services have been limited to space and resource, and you can reach potentially more people online, and hopefully some charities will be able to adapt to have a hybrid where they can still have face-to-face for people that really need it face-to-face, but also can offer more people options for online as well. Obviously that removes or lessens the issue of social distancing as well. When you're doing stuff online, it's a real help for that. So anyone concerned around that as well. I think we'll see more stuff like that, yeah.
I think looking back at everything we've discussed, it's very clear that, you know, strategic planning into user needs and the resources that the digital resources that you have already makes a huge part of this. And, you know, it's so easy to jump on things too quickly or make decisions based on what you think is going to work rather than actually looking at will it work and will it help your users. So I think, yeah, it's just taking the time to think about these things is always the main thing, which sounds so obvious when you say it out loud, but so many people get a little bit overexcited, don't they? I guess we can end things on looking towards the future. As we just mentioned, hopefully things are going to start returning to some normality as we move forward. But what are your predictions for the future in this area?
I think certainly for our charity, fundraising has got to be, you know, the biggest focus. So we've put a lot of time and investment into grants and growing the awareness of the charity. And that's paid off in many senses in terms of people are finding us. And I think this year, by June this year, we'll have awarded £500,000 in grants. And that's been our highest ever. So we're really doing well on that. But I think the flip side to that, of course, is if we're giving out money, we've got to raise the money as well. So it's really now about changing the pivots in terms of our thinking and really sort of heads down now on in terms of the fundraising. And, you know, as I was mentioning before, it's got to be that kind of blend of the physical and digital. And to Chef's point as well, actually, kind of talking to other charities and finding out what they're doing, because, you know, many charities will be in the same situation of, you know, their kind of usual funding streams sort of drying up. So it's really about being smart, kind of listening and, you know, testing and then implementing, you know, kind of new fundraising and just being aware of different opportunities that, you know, potentially will come our way, we hope, you know, kind of going forward.
And just to add to that, it's, I mean, to kind of echo really what Anna was saying there, I think around fundraising is going to be an interesting area to look at. I think the last year has been a bumpy ride for many, and we're still not sure, you know, where the resources are going to be allocated afterwards. Some charities may see less resources they relied upon. So it's about becoming self-sufficient. That might be a big driver, and, you know, sustainability of income streams. So again, making sure that they're set up in the right way to be able to do that the best way possible.
For me, I'm just really hopeful and excited about the kind of the legacy that this year is going to leave in the sense of kind of our blended approach to our working situations. And I think the onset of Zoom calls and video chats, and it actually opens a lot of stuff up in the sense of working flexibly, working remotely, but also being able to engage with people, your service users, in a way that perhaps would not have been considered had it not been kind of thrust upon us. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities to connect with a wider audience, but also kind of have a more blended approach that's outside of, oh, well, we've got to be in the office, or, you know, that's how we do things because we have an office. So I'm excited to see how that pans out.
Excellent. Yeah, I think the next 6 months are going to be so interesting to see how it unfolds, because I know everyone keeps talking about returning to normality, but it's been over a year now since everything's been happening. So returning to normality actually will mean a lot of change once again. And going back to the way it was, or slightly different, is going to be very interesting to see how it all develops. But I think sometimes people forget that actually returning to normality will not be proper normality like it was before. It's going to be very different. I know working from home is always the great example, because I think a lot of more people are going to do it full time. But yeah, hopefully everything looks great in 6 months' time and things are better, hopefully. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, guys. That was really, really great. And thank you so much to all our listeners.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.